The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Payday loans can seem like a welcome rescue for people without credit who are hit with an unexpected emergency. But is it really a rescue or is it a debt trap? The small short-term loan can accumulate mounting fees. Also, in just a couple of weeks, the amount owed grows and grows due to the interest rates that can reach 500% or higher. What does it take to pay off a loan secured by a promise of a future paycheck? What are the risks associated with borrowing these types of quick cash services? How could the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's rescinding of a proposed payday loan rule affect borrowers and payday lending here in Texas? We're joined this afternoon with Ann Bedore. She's the director of the Fair Financial Services Project at Texas Appleseed. Ann, hi, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, David.
And Lisa Stifler is with us. She is the Deputy Director of the State Policy for the Center for Responsible Lending. Lisa, hi.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having me, and it's great to be with you and your listeners today.
Fantastic. And listeners, call in. You're part of this conversation, too. We want to see what you say and what you have, what you've experienced out there. If you've got a payday lending story, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Bedore with Texas Appleseed, I was kind of hoping that there would be something to report interesting from the legislature about payday lending. I can't really find anything. I think that's the story.
Yeah, so a number of bills have been filed, but none of them have come up for a hearing yet. And we're still hopeful that this issue will be given serious consideration this legislative session. But now that we've passed the halfway point and still no hearings, it's definitely a cause for concern that there may not be the will to do something meaningful about this problem.
And so let's talk about what we're looking at as a problem. Lisa, can you describe what is a payday loan? Why is it? What is the conundrum here?
Sure. A payday loan or a car title loan, which is offered and allowed in Texas, they are short-term small-dollar loan products that are typically marketed as a quick financial fix to an emergency, but in reality, they are everything but that. CRL has done extensive research on payday and car title lending for over a decade, and it's a practice that extracts more than $8 billion in fees every year nationally, predominantly from communities of color and low-income communities. And it does so by trapping borrowers in a long-term, high-cost debt cycle, typically at annual interest rates that exceed 300% APR.
Got a caller here. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's get this conversation going with Sam. Sam, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I think, you know, payday lending is more of a symptom of an unequal society than anything. I mean, you can't really expect the private market to, you know, lend small dollars at low interest rates to people with bad credit. But on the other hand, you know, if we were to tax the very wealthy and the corporations a lot more and maybe give larger earned income tax credits to people, they wouldn't need these loans so much. And I just, you know, think that needs to be a bigger part of the conversation here, too.
All right, Sam, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. So, Ann Bedore, what about Sam's comments?
Sure. Well, I think those are really important comments. You know, we face a lot of challenges in Texas with middle-class families and lower-income families struggling to save money, struggling to make the kind of wages that they need to make ends meet. So I think those are really important problems to think about. But I also think it's important in the context of all the policies that we're looking at that having products that are pulling families further behind in the market and in some communities really dominating the market, like in a lot of lower-income communities, especially across Texas, we see that there are far more payday and auto title loan businesses than there are banks or credit unions or other beneficial options, that we're setting families up to fail, that to the extent that there are problems that families aren't making enough money, these kinds of products just make it worse. You know, just to put some dollars and cents to it, a typical $500 loan in Texas is going to cost $1,200 or more for someone to pay back in a very short period of time. And what we see is many families paying fee after fee after fee, and they're just not getting ahead, and they end up going to our churches, to our nonprofits, to get bailed out from these loans because they can't pay their rent. They can't pay anything because these loans suck all their financial resources that they have. And that's a problem. And the CFPB proposal that was finalized, that they're trying to now gut with the new rulemaking process, was a first step in that direction. I think that people often think of this as a zero-sum game, like either we have payday loans and auto title loans with no controls, or we don't have them at all. And this is really a conversation about addressing problems, persistent, ongoing problems that are pulling families backwards and harming families. And so we were encouraged by the 2017 rule and really concerned by the effort now to gut the important protections and steps forward that were put into place there.
We did invite the Financial Service Centers of America and the Texas Organization of Financial Service Centers to come in. These are the payday lending outfits, lobby groups that they have. Both of them declined to join us today to explain how the industry works and how this can be used to really serve the community and not prey upon some of the most vulnerable individuals out there. But Lisa, if you can continue talking about what's happening with these regulations that were proposed and why are they not moving forward?
Yeah, sure. So I guess just to take a step back and kind of describe a little bit about what the rule that was finalized in 2017 by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that Anne mentioned. So that rule was finalized, like I said, in 2017, and it took more than 5 years to put it together. The Bureau took comments and input and research over those more than five-year periods. And the rule at its basis enacted a common sense protection saying that payday lenders need to look at whether a borrower has the ability to repay a loan before making it. Basically, the loan needs to be affordable in light of a borrower's income and expenses, and it has to be able to be repaid without reborrowing or defaulting on other expenses. So this ability to repay concept is really fundamental and a common sense idea in responsible lending.
That's kind of like if you're ever going to buy a car or you take out a bank loan, they're going to find out if you can pay it back.
Exactly. And this rule was supposed to take effect or be go into place and lenders comply with it in August of this year. But now, last month, the Bureau announced that under new leadership appointed by the Trump administration that it is intending to completely gut that common sense proposal in the rule, and they plan to remove that ability to repay requirement.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to continue talking about payday lending. What is it? How is it impacting our community? How can we better inform our consumers about what to do about it? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We want to hear your stories. If you've ever had to take out a payday loan, how did that work out for you? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Payday lenders, there are more payday lending stores than there are Starbucks. That gives you an idea how prolific these places are. and they are a moneymaker for the companies that run them. In Texas, one of the few states, I think one of four states, that has no cap on the interest that they can charge you to take out a short-term loan. So those interest rates can reach 1,000% or more. But people go there because they need them. They are providing the service and they have no place else to turn to, or so they think, when they need that emergency money. So what can be done for the community to help these people? Maybe they can have a choice, an alternative that won't put them into the debt trap. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 614-8980. And you could also, you know, what do you want to know about how these services work? So, Ann Bedour, when people go get a payday loan, do they really understand what they're getting?
You know, I think that a lot of people don't understand exactly how these loans are going to work out. And we see that especially when people go to our social service agencies, to our churches, our food banks, asking for help to get out of these loans, that they think they're making payments that go toward the loan. And too often, those payments do nothing to pay down the principal of the loan. A particular problem that we have in Texas is a new payday or auto title loan product that's billed as an installment loan. And so, you know, the common understanding of an installment loan is that you pay your installments and then you pay off the loan. But these loans are not designed that way. Each installment that is maybe for some people an affordable installment, each installment is actually just a fee, and then people are left with a final payment that's the full loan amount plus another fee. So, for example, if someone borrows $500, they might be paying $120 a month or every 2 weeks for 3 to 6 months, and then they still owe a final payment of $600. And what we see more often than not is that people don't have that money to make that $600 payment, but they think that they've made payments to pay off the loan. And so I think these are really deceptive and problematic practices that we're seeing in the market. If this is a product that's designed to meet a short-term need, then it's important that it be set up that way and not set up in a way that causes people to fail and causes more hardship and more harm.
Back to the phones, 210-614-8980 to join our conversation about payday lending. Michelle is on the line. Michelle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My daughter had a title loan and a payday loan in San Marcos, and we ended up bailing her out. But turns out she paid it multiple times because they continued to harass her for payment. And once she realized what was going on, she stopped paying them. But her father and I are still getting phone calls of someone looking for her and say she has a warrant for arrest and that she owes money in San Marcos.
And what are you doing?
Oh, we're ignoring it. It's gotten bad enough. We've just said have a sheriff deputy come to our door with a warrant because we tell them, you know, she doesn't owe you anything. You need to stop. Our lawyer says, no, they have to actually threaten you before we can do anything. So,
Michelle, thank you for the call. So, Ann Bedour, using the law enforcement to enforce payday lending, how does that work?
It's an illegal practice, and yet we see this happening again and again in Texas. We did a survey of veterans in Texas, which is an important population for our state, but also a population that can face a lot of financial vulnerabilities. And we found high incidence of veterans falling into the payday loan and auto title loan debt trap. But also concerning was that one in four veterans who were in the survey who'd used a payday or auto title loan talked about threats of criminal charges as well. We have been trying to work to solve this problem here in Texas. There's a bill, House Bill 874, that's filed by a representative out of Houston, Representative Wally, that would make important steps forward to create additional penalties for businesses that are breaking the law and making these kinds of illegal threats. You know, we're hoping that bill will get a hearing, will see the light of day so that we can start to whittle away at these kinds of problems. But it's an illegal practice, and yet we see it ongoing and harassing a lot of Texas families, including our veterans.
But Lisa Stifler with the Center for Responsible Lending, different states have different payday lending rules. Texas seems to be pretty open, wild, wild west. But there are ways to have payday lending operate in states that companies make money, they serve the community, and a lot of these problems are avoidable.
Well, sure. I think it's really important to note that 16 states plus the District of Columbia cap interest rates at 36% or less in ways that keep people from getting into this debt trap. And folks in those states have reported that they are better off and that they are able to find ways to cover cash shortfalls or to make ends meet that are much cheaper and much, much less harmful than triple-digit interest rate payday and car title lending. For example, a study in North Carolina showed that the rate cap has had no significant impact on the availability of credit in the state. And former borrowers in both North Carolina and Arkansas have reported that they now are able to build savings, that they can turn to family and friends. They use other more affordable credit products like credit cards or loans from credit unions or community banks that help that are much more lower cost and that help them meet these financial needs that they might have.
So when the lesson there is that some states have figured this out.
Yes, and actually also to sort of add on to that, the Congress capped interest rates for military service members and their families after the Department of Defense studied the issues around payday and car title lending in 2006. And they found that these loan products were predatory, that they caused the military service members to perhaps be less ready for military duty and to even create some concerns around national security. So they encouraged, and under the leadership of President Bush and Congress, they passed the Military Lending Act, which caps interest rates for military service members and their families at 36%. And again, service members have overwhelmingly reported that they are not inconvenienced without access to these high-cost payday loans and that they're able to spend less and use savings.
Another caller. This is Richard. Hi, Richard. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Ah, thank you. One of the things that hasn't been discussed is the very poor management skills and budgeting skills that a lot of these people may be low income, but I know lots of people are making $100,000 or max on their credit card. And we haven't talked anything about education. Like in high school, we used to have home ec. We used to have shop. We used to have how to budget. And you can make all the laws you want, but until people really change their spending habits and manage their money better, they're not going to have emergency funds.
All right. Richard, thank you so much for your call. Ann Bedore, can you respond?
Sure, absolutely. Well, the way that our organization looks at reform, it's really a three-part process in these kinds of really high-cost abuse of credit markets. We need to have fair regulation so that we don't see interest rates like 5 and 600% and loan terms that are dragging people down and creating more financial harms. We need to have better products available for families, and I think those two go hand in hand because when you put some limitations on the most abusive products, it makes people more creditworthy, and so then they can qualify for better products, and so it promotes a positive market. And then the third prong is financial education, and there are a lot of really exciting things happening in Texas. In the city of San Antonio, the city offers free financial coaching to families, and financial coaching is one-on-one interaction to help people navigate financial issues and address financial challenges they may have. So it's an incredible resource for families.
Okay.
We also have
we're going to continue that line talking about what people can do to empower themselves to be able to deal with the payday lenders. We're going to take a quick break, talk about the pledge drive here at Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Why is it so easy for some folks to fall into the debt trap of a payday lender. What can be done about it? Is educating the public enough? What are the alternatives for people who don't have great credit, but they need that immediate relief? You know, they need some money right away, and I don't blame them. And so how much do payday loans actually cost the economy as a whole? We want to hear from you as we have this conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Oh, Ann Bedore is with us. She is with Texas Appleseed. She's the director of the Fair Financial Services Project. And Lisa Stifler, she is with the Center for Responsible Lending, a consumer advocacy group, and she's the deputy director of state policy there. I want to get back to this thing we heard earlier about how law enforcement is being used at times to enforce payday lending. And so I know in this Texas Constitution, it's debtor prisons are like outlawed. We can't have debtor prisons. How is this not a violation of that? And how does this actually work out for people? Do they fear the law when they take out these loans?
It is against the Texas Constitution, it's against state law, and yet it's a problem that we see happening over and over again. We did a study a few years ago and documented 1,500 instances in just 20 counties in Texas where people were not just threatened with criminal charges, but actually pursued, where the payday lenders actually filed criminal complaints against them, and district attorneys or county attorneys sent out threatening letters, and some even engaged in prosecutions in court. And this is just a miscarriage of justice in our state. It's a problem, and it's a problem that we need to solve. I think that publicizing the problem has definitely gone a long way toward addressing it, but we're hoping that the legislature will go that next step and adopt some laws this session that will create clear penalties for this really harmful and illegal practice.
But if you get a phone call from the payday lenders saying, we have a warrant out for your arrest, Do they really have a warrant out for your arrest, or are they, you know, just trying to pressure you? Is this intimidation?
In my experience, it's all intimidation. It's designed to scare people. And many times people call with very threatening messages for payday loans that are very old. And so people remember, oh, maybe I had a loan, but they're not sure. But they're really scared. When someone threatens anybody with arrest, that's terrifying. And so I've talked to some people who have made payments on these loans because they were so scared to find out that it was actually a scam and that the person they paid didn't even own a loan of theirs, and that they were just scared and intimidated. When hearing criminal charges threatened in connection with collections on a loan is one of those top signs that it's a fraud, it's a scam, or it's an illegal practice.
The word predatory lender is thrown around a lot, and it's not a good term. It's a pejorative. People who run payday lenders operations, they don't see themselves as predatory lenders. They see themselves as providing a needed service for a community. If they were predatory, why do people take out loans after loans? I've actually gone to payday lending shops and talked to people in line there to find out what their take is on all this, and they don't feel like they're being preyed upon. They're happy that they have an opportunity to do business there. So this seems to be complex and often contradictory, Lisa.
Well, you know, certainly people are, you know, happy to have the opportunity to receive credit. I think one of the things, though, that we need to take a step back and realize is that these products really truly are designed to keep people stuck in a cycle of debt, because these loans are made to people who often cannot afford to repay them in that short amount of time, the full loan plus the high fee, and then walk away. There is no true assessment of the ability to repay. All that lenders need is access to a bank account or a car title. And because of that, there is that leverage point to get people coming back into the store to take out another loan when the old loan comes due. In fact, on average, people are stuck in 10 loans a year, typically without a break. So, you know, and then from that, because of that, borrowers are driven into deeper financial crises. Payday lending is associated with unpaid bills, overdraft and insufficient fund fees, closed bank accounts, and bankruptcies. And so rather than helping people through a cash crunch or a financial bind, as payday lenders and car title lenders will claim, they are likely to get people booted out of the banking system altogether.
The number to call in is 210-614-8980 as we have this conversation about payday lending. We got an email from Jesse. I believe that the government, maybe the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, should fund an ad campaign that reflects the scary side of payday lending, maybe just like the graphic anti-smoking ads that we've all seen. It's sad to see honest and gullible individuals being taken advantage of. So Lisa, is this a consumer awareness issue?
I think this goes back to the question that we got, or the comment that we got from Richard about financial education, and linked also to Anne's response is, you know, there's a place for, there's sort of that three-pronged approach. And so certainly some education and awareness is there, but, and, you know, should be out there. At the same time, however, policies need to be in place that will allow for responsible and fair products, not products that trap people into a cycle of debt and drain wealth from families. In fact, in Texas alone, more than $1.6 billion in fees, and that's a B, billion, are drained annually by payday and car title lenders. So, you know, this is a business model that extracts wealth and prevents people from building wealth. And so in addition to awareness, there needs to be policy reform that keeps that practice, that predatory practice, from happening, and then allows the more responsible products to take root and flourish.
But it's not just payday lenders and auto title lenders that are racking up billions of dollars in fees. Banks are doing this as well. And people that I've spoken to at the payday lending shops, one of them told me that she closed her bank account and just is no longer banked because of the fees that she was getting hit with at the bank. Because she never knew when she was going to be overdraft, and it was going to be a problem, and one thing would lead to another, and it was better off not to be banked. Lisa?
Certainly there are issues with overdraft practices and products that exist in our banks. Unfortunately, though, like I mentioned before, payday lending will often drive some of that, because if there isn't enough money in your bank account when a loan is due, the lenders will still try to take that money, resulting in an overdraft fee. And sometimes and often, and this has been documented, they attempt to pull that money multiple times, even if people ask their banks to stop the payment. And that just results in more overdraft fees. And on top of that, lenders are also charging insufficient fund fees to the borrower, so that's inflating the cost even more. So again, you know, certainly banks there are issues with overdraft fees, and we have great concerns about those, but we also need to address the payday lending problem as well.
But when we have banking institutions like Wells Fargo, which has been well documented and doing a lot of shenanigans with people's accounts, opening up extra fake accounts and playing around with their credit, people feel like they have no choice. The banking industry is not welcoming to them, and they do not trust the banks, but they do trust the payday lender because it feels like more part of their neighborhood. And so, I mean, can something be generated that's somewhere in between that can also address these individuals' needs? Anne?
Yeah, so I think that the issue of who people trust and who people don't trust is really a very personal issue. And I've heard from many, many Texans who have had horrible experiences with payday and auto title lenders. I want to quote a veteran from Dallas who talked about his personal experience and said, these companies are profiting from families in financial crisis. Another who said, these are a scam, you need to put them out of business. These businesses are predatory. I mean, these are the kinds, it's a vicious cycle of debt to get out of. These are the kinds of comments that we've heard, and those are not the kinds of comments that you associate with a trusted business. You know, we have challenges across our financial services spectrum. I wanted to talk about accounts because there's a very interesting and positive movement happening in the context of bank accounts, a movement that started with the FDIC piloting a safe account, and there are other groups that now have adopted that account, and many banks are now offering these accounts. There are accounts designed to not have overdraft fees and to help people who may carry lower balances so they don't get problems with these kinds of high fees that will make banking inaccessible to them. And so we're seeing important progress happening. You know, with the Wells Fargo scandal, Wells Fargo has paid huge fines, some of the largest ever, and these kinds of practices need to be stopped. But just because we have bad practices in the market doesn't create a reason to have more bad practices. You know, each issue should be looked at, and we're seeing a lot of positive movement in the banking side with these safe accounts, and we're hoping to see the same kind of positive movement with payday and auto title lending. You know, the harms are well documented. Let's start looking at some common sense solutions to address those.
Back to the phones with Martin. Hi, Martin. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I just have a comment about kind of branding the issue. It'd be better if instead of saying that predatory lending, it's parasitic lending, because that really lends to what they do. They slowly eat away at the person's personal income and availability to, like, generate wealth on their own life. So that's it.
Okay, Martin, thank you for that. He says not predatory lending, but parasitic lending. And Lisa, turning towards the Consumer Protection Bureau, that's not going to be some sort of relief?
Well, currently, no, because the Bureau is proposing to completely gut the rule that they finalized that a previous administration leadership, under a previous leadership, they had finalized in 2017. That previous rule certainly would have provided some relief and would have disrupted this predatory business model by requiring lenders to engage in the common sense practice of making sure that a borrower can repay a loan before making that loan.
How big is this annually? How much money is generated from this industry?
Well, nationally, payday and car title lenders drain more than $8 billion in fees annually from borrowers. So that is how much money that they are making off of consumers around the country.
Okay. I'm going to take another break. We'll be right back. We'll talk more. We're going to hear some stories about payday lending. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The number is 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The expression is the poor pay more, especially when it comes to trying to borrow money. This could be something that adds to multi-generational poverty and is a barrier to upward mobility. Why do payday lending? Why is it so costly for the people that need these services? Number is 210-614-8980. And Gabby is on the line. Gabby, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to point out that I like how they're taking the responsibility off the actual consumer. They know what they're doing. They know what they're getting themselves into. I myself have used them, and I was able to get myself out of debt because they were there when I couldn't find somewhere else to get money.
And would you go back?
If I found myself in that situation, I probably would, but I know what I'm getting myself into as well.
Well, would you try to find an alternative, something else, now that you've gone through this and saying, maybe if I can save some money, I'll try something else? But you don't know what else is out there, right?
Well, I've tried using bank loans, and they've never been able to come through. I'm trying to stay away from credit cards just because that was worse for me. But like I said, if it's something temporary and I know what I'm getting myself into, I take the responsibility seriously. I know what I get myself into.
All right, Gabby, thank you for the call. I'm going to go to David. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
All right, sir, go ahead.
I've personally used payday loans myself. I haven't used them in years, but when I was, with a young family and bills came up that I couldn't pay, it was where I usually turned to get money to, you know, keep the lights on, so to speak. And as long as you, you know, come to it with somewhat of an understanding of what you're getting into and how to handle it. For instance, a lot of the payday lenders that I used to go through, as long as you paid the loan back in 2 weeks, you had maybe a $50 fee, and that was about it. So I'd get like a $250 loan. I'd pay it back within 2 weeks, and, you know, I'd have a $50 fee, and at least my, you know, power stayed on at my apartment.
Right.
There's also been a time that I got into a loan that I got in over my head with, and I couldn't pay it back. And I went back to the lender and said, "Hey, look, this is getting out of hand. What you know, I can't pay this back. Well, what are the options?" And they came back and said, "We can freeze the loan, and we'll you can you know here's a payment plan that you can pay us back, and we'll take this out of your paycheck or out of your bank account, you know, every week until it's paid off." And it actually worked out for me. I was able to get out of that loan just by going and talking to the lender. Now, I realize a lot of lenders don't have payment programs like that. I think I just went with a lender that worked really well for me and actually had decent terms.
David, thank you for your call and for your story. I appreciate it. I'm glad it worked out for you. So, Ann Bedore with Texas Appleseed, when you're paying $50 to pay back a $250 loan for 2 weeks, what kind of interest rate are you actually paying on that? It's not cheap,
well,
right?
Not cheap over, you know, I'm trying to do the math quickly in my head, but over five payments, you're going to be paying fees that equal the amount of the loan that you borrowed. So that's just over 2 months. In just over 2 months, you've already paid $250 in fees and still haven't touched the loan principal. You know, I mean, I'd be
But his story was that he took out a $250 loan, and he was able to pay back the whole thing with the fit and pay $50 on top of that. And so, but still, you know, it may seem like in dollar sense, well, $50 is not a lot of money, but actually when you look at the interest rate that's involved and you do the math, that's actually a really high interest rate.
500% interest probably with that kind of structure. And, you know, for people like David who can use it for 2 weeks and pay it off, that's not where the top line concern is. And under the proposal, the rule proposal, someone in David's situation who could afford to pay it off would still get a loan. And so that's not where the problem is. The problem is the people who get drawn out and pay fee on top of fee. And I'd be curious for the loan when David got in trouble, how much he ended up paying on that loan. Because if you think about it, it's not just people eventually being able to pay it back or eventually defaulting. It's about how much wealth this is draining. I was struck by the comment about this is parasitic lending, because if you need $200 or $250 and you end up paying $1,000 to have access to that, then what we're doing is we're taking out the possibility of people saving money. We're taking out the possibility of people building credit so they don't have to resort to these kinds of loan products. You know, it's undermining the financial fabric of our communities. And what we see also is that having a lot of these lenders is actually an economic drain on the community. It drains charitable resources because people end up going to our local churches and nonprofits because they can't pay their rent anymore because they're paying the payday lender. And it hurts our local economies. It hurts local businesses. And so the implications on the individual are important in their own building wealth and building credit. But also we see a lot of harmful impacts on our communities.
Sure. So like Lisa Stifler, not everyone who goes to the loan shark gets their thumbs broken, or else there would be a lot of people walking around with broken thumbs. So there are people who come out of these arrangements dissatisfied with the way things worked out. But you have to look at those who do end up being damaged by this exchange and wondering what went wrong.
Well, yes. You know, the experience that David had is probably the exception, is the exception. The vast majority of people, when they take out one of these loans, are stuck in at least 10 loans a year. And so you do have to look at you know, what are the harms of to those borrowers? And I think Anne has done a great job at framing how it looks from a community perspective, from a preventing wealth building perspective. I mean, when you think about a car title loan, often cars are repossessed when borrowers are unable to repay a loan, which then can prevent people from getting to their jobs. When people default on loans, payday lenders report that default to credit reporting agencies, which damages their credit, which then prevents the ability to get lower cost loans in the future, and then can also, in some respects, prevent getting certain jobs or stable or more affordable housing. So it's there are these long-term consequences that continue from taking out a payday loan that is marketed as a quick fix, but then it ends up being a long-term cycle of debt.
So, Anne Bedore, legislative session halfway through. There are some bills filed. Some of these bills just ask for greater clarity in what people are getting into. No hearing yet on any of these bills. So what's your mood? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, I always remain hopeful because these are such important issues for our communities. And I think we just need to keep the conversation going, keep the message coming. You know, we can't compete with the millions and millions of dollars in campaign contributions that the payday and auto title lenders give or the army of lobbyists they have at the Capitol. But we can tell the truth, and we work very closely with local community partners, and people are speaking out, and people are sharing their stories, and borrowers are talking about their experiences, and we need to keep the conversation going to improve options for our communities. And
All right.
This is a long-term fight, but we're hopeful we can see positive.
Anne Bedore is the director of Fair Financial Services Project at Texas Appleseed. Lisa Stifler is with us. She's the deputy director of state policy at the Center for Responsible Lending. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
All right, and another scintillating show on The Source. Paid.